Chapter 36.
You cannot go this long without seeing me. Not ever again. Understand? I forbid it. Forbid!
Caris had given in to the temptation to abuse her powers and decided that she was entitled to the services of the Blackguard's physica/masseurs, Rhoda. She decided it was acceptable as long as she didn't take either of them away from their duties. Unfortunately, that meant they were meeting 2 hours before dawn. The Chromaria was home to all sorts of strong personalities from all over the world, and with that came idiosyncratic styles of dress and cosmetics use, but even here Rhoda stood out. Of Tyrian and Parian lineage, she had dusky skin and wavy hair that she wore in a topknot, the explosion of hair above it woven with coloured beads. When outside, she wore a broad-brimmed petasos with a hole cut in it for her topknot. Of slim build, except for a round, soft belly that made her look perpetually pregnant, she wore more, and more garish, face paint than anyone Caris had ever seen. But no perfume.
"That's for whores," she said.
But once she put her hands on your muscles, nothing else mattered. Rhoda knew Caris's body like no one else in the world. She started with a quick examination of Caris's body, checking the mobility of that left ankle she'd sprained so long ago, testing how far and how evenly her limbs moved. She clucked and pulled and tweaked. She found aches Caris hadn't even been aware of, and old injuries Caris barely remembered. Then she went to work. She was a sub-red, and her hands radiated heat deep into Caris's left shoulder, still swollen from when she'd jumped off the top of the hippodrome into the great river. At an old hamstring injury, she pulled the heat away as well as the heat from Caris's own body, her hands becoming as ice.
"And what is this?" Rhoda asked, her elbow working on a spot low in Caris's back.
Caris grunted. She wasn't required to answer.
"Too much sitting. Feel this?"
Caris mumbled into her cushions.
"I have to hold court, you know that. Iron White can talk while standing, yes? Talk standing. Also this?"
Rhoda grabbed a double handful of Caris's hair. She always ended with the scalp massage. It was Caris's favourite part, the sweetest medicine of their time together. But now she tapped at Caris's hairline with one finger.
"Grey, and not just one or two. At your age, you always dyed your hair for whimsy. Now not fun. More sleep is order."
"Too much to do," Caris said. "Too many decisions to make." In fact, she should be going over her lists right now. There were so many items now that she had to write down the non-secret ones.
"This is what happens when you stay away," Rhoda said. "You forget how this works. I tell you what you're doing wrong. I tell you what price you're paying for what you're doing wrong. I tell you how fix. Then you ignore me."
"I'm sorry, Rhoda," Caris said. She sighed.
"Iron White. Ha! Feel like iron-necked white to me."
She was glad to hear Rhoda tease her about it, but it had had an odd effect on Caris, being called the Iron White, as if she were a name. She had recoiled from it at first.
"I'm not that."
But the more she thought about it, the more she realized rejecting it was foolish as a practical matter. If she were ever to check off, win the war, she had to lead. She had not the animal presence or the huge charisma of her husband. She was small. It meant something, that, even if it shouldn't. But someone small could be known for being hard and quick, not just physically, but mentally too. The people she led needed her to be strong. They needed her to be special if they were to follow her against gods and monsters. So she'd made a new goal. Note: become the woman they hope I am. Become the Iron White. Rhoda was still chattering, and Caris loved her for it nearly as much as for her amazing hands.
"There is no part where you argue, understand? I have fired more important patients, thank you."
"Of course, Rhoda, I—"
"Wait, more important than the White?"
Rhoda grumbled. She put her hands around Caris's neck as if to wring it.
"Do not flag wave bull in open field."
But she was amused.
"My Iron White, here is what you should do. More sleep, less exercise, so you can have regular moons by the time husband is back. More standing, some riding if you can fit it in. less wine to relax, and more use of your room slave.
I already use...
Oh.
Carus had promoted one of Mauricia's under-slaves, an intelligent young woman named Aspasia, to be her room slave in Mauricia's absence, but the woman served as chief slave and messenger. She slept at the foot of Carus's bed, not in it. Carus knew that in the absence of their husbands it was not uncommon for women to use their female room slaves, as their husbands did, for relief. Many nobles didn't consider it being unfaithful for a woman to use a female slave that way, though they believed using a male slave or even a eunuch was. But Carus had never even considered it. As a blackguard, she hadn't had a room slave. That just had never been part of her life, except for her hating Mauricia, who'd served so ably as Gavin's room slave, apparently excelling in all of a room slave's duties and more.
Damn you, Mauricia.
The searches had turned up nothing. No one had seen her leave. The blackguards swore she'd yelled fire but hadn't run past them or dangled a rope down the outside of the tower. She was just gone. Nor had Carus found any money trail. Turrigal Onesto had confirmed that Mauricia had access to at least one account he knew of, but it hadn't been touched. Nor had anyone seen her at the markets, at the docks, anywhere. It was as if the woman had evaporated. Regretfully, Carus gave up on it. There were too many other things to do to waste more time on that one. Note, find Mauricia. Scratch that. So when do I scratch off Gavin? Every criterion that justified crossing off Mauricia applied to him. He'd disappeared exactly the same way and on the same day. The searches for him said exactly the same thing. Nothing. 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 Note. Find Gavin. She would never take that off the list. She would die first. Carus paid Rhoda, insisting on it, since the woman had woken with her and this was in addition to her normal duties, and then threw on a robe. She hadn't even noticed her own nudity as she'd walked across her room to grab the coins. She was alone here with only her physicker and the two blackguards at the door. After Rhoda left, Carus said, "Baya, what's the problem?"
"Hi, lady," he asked, pained.
"We've been in the field. We trained together. You've seen me naked dozens of times. You're as nervous as a boy beckoned to a woman's bed for the first time." He swallowed.
"Honestly, hi, lady?"
"Yes."
I guess you always notice. I mean, a man does, right? But I mean, there's noticing and... noticing. And I guess it's one thing to sort of... appreciate you when we were blackguards together... I mean, I didn't stare. Tried not to. But now that you're holy, it makes me feel...
She held up a hand. She needed to remember that when the white asked for total honesty, she sometimes actually got it. Some people took her orders as a religious obligation.
Just pretend not to notice. That's part of the work. Do better. Now get out. I'm angry with you. I'll be going over papers for the next couple hours until my day begins. Adrastia can handle watching an empty room and me until then.
Bayoniel, who'd faced the green god with her, unflinching as death came for him, practically bolted from the room. Carus went to her desk and sat. She gave the blackguard hand signal.
Clear?
Tyr nodded.
Lot of work just to get your own blackguard to report to you.
It seemed you had more to say after you gave your official report. I had some more questions.
Days ago, Tia had finally given her report about how the mighty had been attacked, and then how they'd escaped in the presence of Commander Fisk, but Carus was certain there had been more to the story that she'd held back. It just hadn't been the most important thing to find out about in the midst of all the crises she'd had to deal with every day for the last couple of weeks. But Tia goggled.
Are you joking?
Whatever do you mean? Carus asked. I set the emergency meeting signal twice, even though Mauricia told me I'm never supposed to set it more than once in case I'm being watched, and you never came.
Carus's heart dropped into her stomach.
Mauricia never handed over the list of emergency signals before she fled. That bitch.
What else had Carus missed?
Tia paled. Or Hollum have mercy. What if those were in that package? I could be dead already if the Order was watching.
And what do you mean she's a bitch?
What? Caris asked. Caris and Tia had seen each other almost every day in the last weeks, but to keep their relationship as handler and spy secret, neither of them had acted out of the ordinary. It must have been killing Tia.
Just report, Caris said. Quickly.
Luckily, Tia had obviously prepared herself for this in case she needed to report the essentials in only a few minutes. She told about the light guards murdering Goss, and the flight down the stairs, the flight back up the lifts and out onto the roof. She backtracked briefly with, "And you know that Andros Guile had the White assassinated, right? He hired my master, Murder Sharp, to do it. I overheard him offer the contract myself." Caris hadn't known. It was a punch in the guts. They'd had a quiet funeral for Aurea Palar, according to her wishes. Everything in her life had been public for decades, and she'd long demanded her parting be private. How Caris had wept, and thanked the old woman for the privacy so she could do so freely. That soulless piece of shit, Andros. Aurea had been dying anyway. Why hadn't Andros Guile simply let her go? Because that wouldn't be a win over his old nemesis? No. Because he'd stacked the deck for who would become the next White, and he'd wanted to get his grandson approved as Prism-elect, and he feared that Aurea Palar was going to stop him. By killing her before Sunday, he'd gotten both. Except that Aurea had seen it coming. She'd taken care of Caris, prepared her.
"You said something about a package of letters," she asked suddenly. "Wait, not bound with red ribbon." "On Mauricia's desk, yes," Tia said.
Oh, no. Tia spun out the rest of the tale to Caris's growing horror, the discovery of the escape lines, which Aurea had given Kip a hint about, the flight to the docks, Kip's hasty, Andros Guile arranged marriage to Tisis Malagos. Caris had known Tisis was gone, but none of her spies had been able to tell her why or where yet. The girl was supposed to be a hostage for Hrothgar's good behaviour. Scratch that item off the list. And not the way Caris had hoped. Tia then told about her own decision to stay, then backtracked to tell how Tremblefist had been the one to blow up the cannon tower to save the Mighty's ship from being sunk. Caris had already learned about that one from other sources, but the loss was still fresh. Tremblefist had died for his young charges, sacrificed himself for Kip. Then Tia told her about kidnapping Mauricia with Murder Sharp, and how the woman had tried to get the bundle of papers to Caris and failed. So Mauricia wasn't a traitor. She was a martyr. The woman Caris had been denouncing as a bitch and whore and disloyal had been doing everything in her power to be Caris's friend and faithful servant. Damn me. But why would Andros want Mauricia? This Murder Sharp hadn't known that Mauricia was a spy master, but that meant only that the Order didn't know she was a spy. Andros had instructed Sharp to take her papers. Maybe he knew or suspected what she was. Maybe he'd just gotten lucky. Caris had felt as if she were drowning ever since she'd taken the white robe and watched a roomful of nobles prostrate themselves before her. To hear that someone had tried to throw her a lifeline, only to have it snatched away, was almost too much to bear. I need to kill Andros. Except he was untouchable, too valuable, too powerful, irreplaceable.
Hi, lady. I'm sorry to rush, but I want to make sure I tell you everything.
Caris motioned she should go on, and then Tia told her about the orders offering to kill whomever she'd wanted killed, and how she'd tagged and then untagged Quentin. And there we got lucky, Caris thought.
Have they followed up with you about that? Caris asked. Will they kill you for it? I've got a plan, Tia said. But if I just disappear, I'll do my best not to talk.
It seemed surreal to be talking so blithely about such things. People didn't just disappear from the safety of the Chromeria. That was Elita, the satrapy of traitors and pirates and cutthroats and bad men. A young girl like Tia shouldn't have to be a warrior. She should be over-analyzing what she'd said to some boy who might reject her because of it, not analyzing what she'd said to some cultist who might murder her because of it. This is the world we've both been thrust into now. Sink or swim, girl. And Orholam have mercy on my soul for throwing you in the water. They talked a bit more, bringing each other up to speed and updating their dead drop and emergency drop procedures. Then, finally, Caris said,
"We're almost out of time. Any quick questions before I give you your new orders?" "Yes. How'd you know that Quentin was telling the truth about Hylaxia Torlep?" Caris sniffed, amused. Aurea Pallor left me many tools, not only eyes and ears. I have fingers and blades as well. My spies learned of Quentin's guilt. When he confessed, I had no one in Hyloxia at Torleb's house, but I did have people in place to see if he would do what a guilty man would do when he hears a fellow conspirator has been seized. But Torleb didn't liquidate any of his goods or home, which either meant he was innocent or just intelligent. He did hire out an entire well-known smuggler's ship, without telling the captain what he would carry. Within the hour, we had that smuggler sail on other quick business. If Torleb's timing had been merely a coincidence, say, he was hiring a smuggler for some other illicit cargo that we didn't know about because we'd never really examined him that closely, then he would have waited for his favourite smuggler to return. He didn't. He went to another instead. This one we let stay. And then early the morning of the executions, one of my light fingers returned to me with Torleb's diary. Most clever men just can't help but brag about their cleverness, even if only to themselves. His wording was always vague enough that alone it could have meant anything. Combined with all the rest of the evidence, though, it was damning. She paused, a chastened grin stealing over her lips. But perhaps I shouldn't blame anyone for boasting of their cleverness, now should I? I've just done it myself. I won't tell, promise, Tia said, and she grinned for the first time. It's nice to see you smile, Tia, Caris said. There was a quick rap on the door, and 5 beats later, having given Tia just enough time to take up a post against one wall, a stoic Bayerniel poked his head in.
Breakfast and correspondence, high lady.
2 minutes while I finish these papers, Caris said.
He closed the door. Caris looked at Tia, somber once more.
You've no hint what happened to Marissa, or even Gavin? She asked Tia, as if the girl would have held that back. No word at all, high lady. Nor way to ask without arousing suspicion, else I would have done it, I promise. I care for both of them too, you know.
Caris did. She was silent a long while, querying Orholm and her own heart if she was ready for this next step.
Orholm, please, this is the last moment to let me know if I'm stepping out of your will with this.
But he said nothing, and she saw nothing except that it must be done.
Tia, I hoped that we could defang the Order. But serpents make poor pets. They offered a murder to you as a gift, and allowing one of their own to kidnap the Prism's own room slave? These are not actions of a group that can be brought back into Orholm's goodness. Tia, what you've told me changes what we need to do. Much as I wish we could concentrate our forces in one direction at a time, this war must be fought on 2 fronts simultaneously. Are you familiar with the Bull Luxiatica ad Abolendum? Something to do with the Luxors? It's a letter sealed with lead, giving certain powers to an office or a person. It's too dangerous for you to carry anything like that, so if you are challenged, yours will be hidden in my desk, in the secret compartment you found. Please don't give me occasion to have to produce it.
Dear Orholm, forgive me. Even as I denounce serpents, I'm creating one.
What are you talking about? Tia said. Why would I need such a thing? Will they put me on Orholm's glare for this? Will I deserve it?
Her face as still and hard as the iron white she aspired to be, Caris said,
In secret, I'm conferring upon you the title of Malleus Hereticorum, Hammer of Heretics. You are now named and empowered as a Luxor, Tia. The first named in my lifetime, and let us hope the last. Your mission is no longer merely to infiltrate the Order of the Broken Eye. You are to destroy them. Do whatever you have to do, up to and including murdering innocents. The blessing and forgiveness of the Chromeria and the Magisterium entire rest upon you for every lie and sin you deem necessary to accomplish this task. This is war. Kill the Order, Tia. Kill them all.